Today on Vox Talks Economics, does free media matter? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. COVID-19 deaths before vaccines became available introduced us to a new piece of health jargon, the non-pharmaceutical intervention. Governments took the difficult choice to restrict our freedoms, but we also voluntarily socially distanced, or we just stayed in more. Does more access to truthful information mean governments are more likely to intervene promptly, and will free media convince more citizens to decide to respond too? A new study focuses on the early COVID lockdowns, and I'm at the London School of Economics to meet the authors, Tim Besley and Sasha Dree. Tim, welcome back to Vox Talks.
Hello, it's nice to be back.
And Sasha, welcome for the first time.
Hello, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
This paper, it makes a distinction between free media countries, first of all, and censored media countries, which is obviously a loaded distinction, isn't it? Who is making this distinction? Can you give me an example of which countries end up in each category?
Yeah, so we use the definition of free media given by the Varieties of Democracy project. It's a global network of political scientists based in the university in Sweden, and it's a broad definition of what media freedom means. It's the access to a plurality of sources of information, as well as the ability for ordinary people to discuss political matters at home or in the public sphere. And so what this media freedom index that we use does is to create a score for each country about the level of media freedom. Mm-hmm. And so to give you an example, the UK has a score of 0.85 on a range between 0 and 1. And so it's classified as a free media country, while Iran has a score of 0.35 roughly, which is below our threshold of 0.7. And so we classify it as a censored media country. And we also look at a range of other indexes, such as the one by the Freedom House Project or the media censorship by RSF, and it finds broadly similar classification of countries.
Okay, and the other term that you've used here that really jumps out is responsiveness. So what does responsiveness in this context mean for governments? What does it mean for citizens?
So the way we think about responsiveness in this research is, I think, to contextualize it, thinking about an evolving pandemic. So if we cast our mind back to the early part of 2020, when all of this was becoming visible to us, one of the signature statistics that people were looking at were infection rates and then subsequently death rates. So the way we think about responsiveness is, as those type of statistics are evolving, how are governments responding to that in terms of the kind of measures they were putting in? Now, of course, there's a whole variety of measures from lockdowns to various kinds of mandates or suggestions like wear a mask or socially distance, a whole set of measures. And when we think of responsiveness, we think that because the pandemic is evolving at a different rate in different places, we're interested in comparing it different points in that evolution, which governments are beginning to implement different kinds of policies.
So if I get this right, because I had to think about this for a while, your hypothesis is that governments and citizens are both more likely to be responsive if the media is free. But why would that happen necessarily?
There's sort of two components to this, and Sasha may want to add to what I say, but there's two components to this, because there's a kind of mutual interaction between what government is doing and what citizens are doing. So think about a lockdown. When the government acts, it can say, stay at home, but it's got no guarantee that that's going to mean that people do stay at home. And so it's going to be making some judgment about how much is our announcement of a lockdown actually going to translate into reduced interaction between citizens passing the disease among each other. And then the willingness of government to implement that policy is going to be based on that judgment. If the government takes the view that, you know, I'll announce a lockdown, but actually people won't do anything, then mm-hmm. that's going to make it much less likely that they implement that lockdown. So from a kind of government point of view, they're looking at or conjecturing what they think the citizens are going to do. But then the citizens are also looking back at the government and saying, what's the government up to here? You know, most of us had never even heard of a lockdown when the pandemic came along. And so to some extent, that's the other side of this mutually interactive process. The citizens are looking and saying, why is the government doing this? Are they doing it for reasons we think are valid? And so that's part of the story.
Yeah, and that's actually what motivated us to work on this project early on in the pandemic. There were these claims that the media was instrumental in telling us about the true extent of how dangerous the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic was, and pushing claims that the government should take unprecedented measures to flatten the curve or reduce the spread of the disease through imposing lockdowns. And so the way we approach this question is to think that the presence of free media will make citizens more aware of how dangerous the virus is, which would then make them more compliant with measures that the government will take. And then in turn, the governments will then be more likely to take lockdown measures, knowing that citizens will be more likely to comply with them.
Right. And this all starts off with a measure of the intensity of the pandemic at that point in each country. But surely if you're doing that by reported deaths, which you did, that also depends on how free the media is.
Yeah, and this is one of the conundrums in doing this kind of research. Yeah. You've got to the nub of that very quickly. That, first of all, there's two levels of this that we worried about and we do worry about. One is death reporting. In countries without free media, there may just be less death reporting, even if there's actually underlying deaths that are taking place. So you have to worry about that. The other is the measures themselves can be having some impact on the level of infection and deaths also. So there's a kind of reverse causation that could be going on too between the measures that government are taking and then the subsequent evolution of the pandemic. So it's a far from straightforward situation to be studying from a kind of empirical point of view.
How did you sort that out then?
So initially what we did was we empirically looked at the relationship between an increase in death and the responses by government and citizens. So what Tim was describing as responsiveness. And we found that across all countries, there was on average a high level of responsiveness by both government and citizens. But because we worried about these inaccuracies in how death is reported and the potential for reverse causality, what we did is we ran a simulation of what the trajectory of the pandemic would be in each country, using epidemiological model that was created at the Center for Molecular Life Sciences at the University of Basel. There's this platform online that's called COVID-19 Scenarios. That was one of the most popular ways for government and anyone to go online and figure out where the pandemic is headed in each country. So we use this as a predictor of the true level of death rate in each country. And when we do this, so that accounts for potential inaccuracies in death reporting, we find that countries with free media are much more likely to have responsive reactivity to the pandemic. As the death rate increases in their country, the citizens will be more likely to reduce their mobility. And we don't find a similar pattern in censored media countries.
I'm asking you all about how you measure things at the moment, and I promise we'll get on from that. But it's so fascinating about how you do measure these things. So that the last piece of this jigsaw puzzle is citizens, how you're measuring their responsiveness, and also how you're distinguishing that responsiveness between a sort of social contract responsiveness, a voluntary compliance, and just doing what they're told to do because they might get fined or arrested or something.
So what we do, because we want to have this global, looking at the patterns globally, we use the Google Mobility Trends, which is a measure of the level of time people spend at home or outside based on a pre-pandemic baseline. So we know the percentage change in mobility, both at home and outside for each country at every point in time during the pandemic. And we use that as a measure of how responsive citizens are. And based on what Tim was saying earlier, the way we approach this question is to think there's this relation between citizens and governments, and the voluntary compliance will increase as citizens are more responsive. So we focus on mobility changes during lockdowns. And we do find that in free media countries, as the death rate doubled, citizens in free media countries were 30% more likely to stay at home.
And one interesting thing, and can't remember where this came in the research, is we then looked at Google searches on COVID-19, because we thought, well, if people are getting more information from media in some countries, you know, they may just leave it there. But one thing that I do, if I ever hear an interesting story on the media, is I go to my computer and I start searching online for additional information. So we thought a kind of good barometer of people's responsiveness would be that they would be searching more in the free media countries. And there's data on that, and we look at that. And indeed, that's exactly what is found, that there were more searches in the free media countries, suggesting that something was cutting through, that the way the media were reporting this was leading citizens to follow up in that way.
Hmm. Yeah, we find that in free media countries, there is a higher level of Google searches about the pandemic on average. Mm-hmm. And during an outbreak, when there's a peak of death rate, there is also a sudden increase in Google searches for the COVID-19 pandemic, which we don't find in censored media countries. So it really is pointing towards the presence of free media helping people be more aware about the risk associated with this disease.
But let me ask this again in a slightly different way. I would have thought in the least free countries, the citizens would be the most responsive just because that's what they have to do.
So you're right. There's a background factor here, which we don't have a direct measure of, which is you might call the kind of coercive nature of the state.
Yes.
And obviously, to some extent, that's kind of biasing our results away from finding any impact of free media. Because if part and parcel of being in a press media country is you're terrified that your government's going to come and lock you up for the most minor transgression, like going on a public transport without a mask, mm-hmm. that's probably going to be sufficient. So to some extent, it's interesting that we still find these results, but we are doing our very best to control for these background country level differences. So it's not like we're completely not taking those into account. So within the sort of statistical methods we use in the paper, we are controlling for country differences. But I think you're making a very valid point. There's two models of compliance. And this is why we found it such a fascinating experience that, you know, the traditional, I call it even more economic model of compliance is
yes.
that people do things because there's a detection, monitoring, and punishment scheme. Indeed, that's the archetypal economic model of compliance versus this model that if you can convince people through media, through exhortation, persuasion, whatever it would be, that they're doing the right thing for society, then citizens are ultimately willing to go along with things in that environment.
It's interesting that you're putting that into the economic model, because other social sciences would be quite comfortable with that social contract model to explain things. As you say, it's been excluded from this kind of work quite often, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think there are parts of economics, and it is only parts of economics, that are inherently skeptical about putting things into preferences, if you want to put it
yeah,
that way.
Yes.
You know, I want to get away with making the narrowest possible assumption I could ever make about human nature. And roughly speaking, that's that people like consumption, mm-hmm. private consumption. And if I can't explain everything that way, I'm going to be skeptical. And then punishments are the flip side of that. You know, if you're being punished, fined, even jailed, then the punishment can be conceived of as a constraint on your private consumption.
Yeah.
So that model works very routinely in a world where you can take the most narrow motivation. But to be fair to economists, there are plenty around who have been more than happy to embrace a wider view of human nature than it's just consumption in the end.
I promised I'd stop talking about methodology sooner or later. This is the time, isn't it? Let's get to the results. In which countries were the government or the people most responsive to the rise in COVID deaths?
We take a panel data of 155 countries, mm-hmm. and as I've explained, we classify them as being either free media or censored media countries. And we look at the initial period of the pandemic up until May 2020, where the media is claimed as having been instrumental in pushing for lockdowns and making citizens more aware about the danger related to the COVID-19 pandemic. And we find that citizens in free media countries tend to be the ones that will reduce their time spent outside when there is an increase in death rates in their country. So mm-hmm. a doubling of the death rates is associated with a decrease in 18 percentage points in their time spent outside, which is about a 30% decrease in the time they spend outside. And we don't find a similar pattern when we look at censored media countries. So mm-hmm. it's only really the free media countries that appear to have more responsive citizens. Of course, then you might ask that you might be worried that free media countries are also on average richer, they have older populations, so they have more underlying risk with COVID-19, or they might be more democratic.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we look at whether we can find similar relationship, looking at, you know, a cut in the countries based on their GDP per capita, the average year of education, and we don't find similar pattern.
And it's interesting because you could explain this by all sorts of institutions that have got nothing to do with free media as well. And education was one that came into my head. If people know more about the consequences of doing what would have been the wrong thing in this case, then they're more likely to do the right thing.
Yeah, we were very aware of that. And it's a very, very good point you're making. And so what we did to respond to this is to try a battery of other ways of looking at country differences. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we find resoundingly and continue to find is that the one that seems to be the cut that explains these differences, empirical differences, is free media. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, still to sort of push your concern further, free media countries are not a kind of experiment that God or anyone else created in the world. You know, the free media countries are free media for other reasons, and it's going to be correlated with various things. But it is still striking that when we look for those other cuts, like education would be a good example, we're simply not finding them. And that doesn't nail the issue that, oh, this is free media, it's definitely not something else. But in terms of increasing our confidence that what we think we're finding is media related, I think that's how I would frame what we found.
Yeah. And the title of the paper is Does Free Media Matter? So we're not trying to say it's only free media that matters for how countries and people respond to the pandemic. But in the paper, what we do is we also have a decomposition exercise where we just look at the raw difference in mobility for people that live in a free media country versus a censored media country. And we find that there's 40% of this difference that we can attribute to the presence of free media, but it still leaves 60% of that difference that could be explained by other factors like education.
You see, as a journalist, I'm almost disappointed that it's only 40%. I'd really like it to be 100%, but fair enough. You have to assume that this is a complicated situation that you're trying to tease apart here. Now, one of the other ways that I want to talk about how you tease this apart is you restrict this to the early months of the pandemic when there was one message very loud and clear. Now, in free media countries, they also give airtime to COVID skeptics, people who don't like the idea of vaccines, people who don't like the idea of government control and things like that. Does that over time, is that a penalty of free media that would erode responsiveness?
I think it's a very good question and not one I think we thoroughly know the answer to. We made a decision, and with research one always makes decisions, to focus on what is sometimes now called the Great Lockdown.
Yes.
Because it did have some interesting features. I mean, it's 2 years ago now, but we can still, I think it's pretty salient what was going on, that there was this huge degree of uncertainty. And that manifests itself, like you were saying, Tim, in the form of people on different sides of the issue. But by and large, I would say, by the time many of the lockdowns came, skepticism was fairly muted because, you know, we were looking at pretty grisly situations in many countries. But that was a different period as we learned to live with the virus, and the possibility of better treatments and the vaccine, of course, was a kind of game changer and did change the nature of the debate. And I think about vaccine hesitancy and how far that was or was not allowed airtime in free media countries. So it does definitely put cases on both sides. And you said something very early in your introduction, equating free media with truth. While most of us in our hearts who think free media is valuable do think it's something about the truth will out, and it is a good way to motivate it. You know, there are times when free media and truthful messaging don't obviously go hand in hand, that certain opinions appear in the media and seem to get a lot of airtime when experts think this is disproportionate to the confidence that most experts would have in this. But we, in the end, in this research, said, look, there's this particular period in history. It was the first phase of the pandemic. It had particular features where we're pretty confident the role of media was in this kind of coordinating role we described to you earlier, and therefore studying that. Now, it means we kept our powder dry on possible follow-up studies, which is to say, were subsequent phases of the pandemic different than the first phase of the pandemic? And that's something that someday we may come back to, but we made a decision that we would want to home in on this very particular piece of history.
Is it dynamic? If you made Iran into Denmark, do you then achieve a difference of behavior in Iran, or is it just a cross-section in time?
What we try to do in this research is to measure the impact of having free media on responsiveness by citizens and governments. It would be very difficult to imagine what Iran would be like.
What exactly would you do to do that? Yes.
Yeah. So I think what our research and findings point to is the role of the free media and the fact that it matters for making citizens more aware and government more responsive. But there are also other aspects, I think, that will matter for Iran to have a response to the pandemic that's closer to that of Denmark. So free media will be one aspect, but it will also be how prepared they are to have access to masks or vaccines, or their level of, you know, capacity to respond to a shock. I think free media will be one aspect of that difference between Denmark and Iran.
this is part of a bigger piece of work, isn't it? Because, I mean, a little while ago, I was listening to Tim giving a keynote at the UNU wider conference about these bigger issues of trust in society and how we think about it, how we model its effects and what that means. So there's a lot more work here.
Oh, for sure. And the way I guess I think about it in the broader sense is there's an important set of narratives around what gives effective government. And we don't know the answer to that, and it won't be simple. But what we do is we look for particular contexts where evidence can be collected and analyzed to try and tease out different aspects of this. And hopefully that can help to make economists useful in certain kinds of policy dialogues when we're looking for the kinds of things that make the world look the way it does. But because of the complexity and multidimensionality to this, it's never going to come down to, you know, here's my silver bullet. If you only do this or do that, you're going to have a transformed world. Unfortunately, for all of us, that's never the way the world looks. So this research agenda, it really just slots into that wider understanding of all the things that really might matter in the end.
Well, you're certainly asking the big questions. Thank you very much for talking about it today. Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you, Tim.
And thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
The paper, and I think you're going to want to read it after that, is called The Political Economy of Lockdown. Does Free Media Matter? Authors Tim Besley and Sasha Dre, you've just heard from both of them. It is discussion paper 17143 at CPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research, and if you want to discover the outer limits of economics, then listen to Vox Talk's Economics Today. When you subscribe, you'll find more than 200 episodes now. So whatever type of economics you like, there is a Vox Talk waiting for you.